This shiur has been brought to you from the Sharim Audio Library. For information about Sharim or to order additional CDs, please visit our website, www.sharim.com, or email sharim@sharim.com. Thank you for making Sharim part of your continual learning experience.
Okay, so this is a class about chinuch, of education, and Baruch Hashem gives us a gift of children. There's a pasuk where Yaakov explains to Esav, these are my children. But he doesn't say these are my children. He says, Hayiladim asher chanan Elokim esavdecha. These are the children that God granted me. And it's a beautiful way of looking at it, that every child is a gift. And Hashem decided that this neshama is supposed to be in this household. And that's a really beautiful thing when you think about it. You say, wait a minute, this is the child that Hashem gave me, because this is the child that Hashem thinks that I am the best parent for this child. That's a real vote of confidence, right? I have a funny story. Once my husband's a Kohen, and he did a Pidyon HaBen, and the mother of the baby said, you know, we were thinking about it, did we really have the guts to take our child back from you? Maybe you gave the child better than us. No. It's your child. God thinks you are the best parent for this child, not the Kohen. Anyway, so therefore, that means that's Hashem's vote of confidence, and not can I raise this child, but how can I raise this child? So coming when the children are little is a good start, because what you're doing is you're saying that I want to do it right. I want to do it right. So when people want to do it right, that's encouraging. So they say, somebody went to, I think it was Rav Hirsch, with a five-year-old and said, I want to raise this five-year-old right. And he said, you're 5 years too late. So to start from the beginning. But it doesn't mean that you can't start from any age and any stage. I'm not saying no. And I don't think anyone can be a perfect parent. I don't think that's possible. But therefore, you can't be a perfect anything in life. So therefore, if you're trying and you mean to be a good parent, that's a good start. Someone told me the most remarkable story today, so it's fresh in my mind. I can't even imagine this story. She said she had a child who was 8 months old, and he'd had every illness around already, like even though she was nursing him, and even though she had had chicken pox, he got chicken pox by the time he was 6 months old, and this, that, and the other thing. She went to the doctor. She said, this is not regular. This is not normal. And they checked it out, and he had a very, very weak immune system. And the doctor said, you have two choices. Choice A is to give him gamma globin, I think she said, and it'll be for the rest of his life, and it'll be a sickly child all his life. The other choice is to totally limit the amount of germs he has contact with for the next 2 years, and his immune system will build up slowly. And that means not inviting any guests into the house, and that means not letting your kids have any friends over, and you not going anywhere where there might be germs for the next 2 years. And when you go to the store, go to the all-night store at 1 a.m. when no one is there, and try to keep him with as germ-free a house as possible. And then you'll have enough trouble fighting the germs that are around the house, but those germs will be able to fight. Her husband used to go to work, and therefore he couldn't touch him. He would come home from work and wash his hands, but still he couldn't get too close to him because of the germs that he might be carrying. And do that for 2 years, and then at the end of 2 years, hopefully, you know, his immune system will be built up. And that's what she chose. Can you imagine what I said to her, I can't believe you had the fortitude to do that for 2 years. She said, this child is very important to me. I'm like, yeah, a real person's child should be very important to them. But there are so many people who make choices on what's good for themselves and not what's good for their child. But this is beyond, you know what I'm saying? This is an unbelievable dedication. And she said, it worked. Now he's an adult and he's fine. You know, an investment like that is, and it's mind-boggling. Anyway, so that's number one, is believe in yourself, that God gave you the confidence to be a good parent. And number two is believing in your kids. Believe in your kids. Every child is a Yiddish neshama, and therefore every child is a gem. Every child is different. And every child has character traits that will drive you nuts. And right. When you're on track. Kids. On the other hand, every child has character traits that are amazing. And when they have the most difficulties, the fact that they're able to stand up straight is still amazing. You know what I'm saying? So if you really value each child as a gem, then you will treat these children like they're important, and you will give them the biggest gift you can give them, which is the gift of self-esteem. I used to be a quiet, shy kid. No one believes that, because I'm really not very shy today. But when I was 10 years old, they sent me to the store, and they came for me 20 minutes later because everybody pushed ahead of me, and I couldn't open my mouth to say I was next. And I mean, I was always an intelligent child, but I was a shy child. But my parents infused me with that self-confidence of you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. And I blessed them for it. Because, I don't know, I was in my 30s, I wrote a book about Shalom Bias, and after I wrote the book, I'm like, what kind of chutzpah is that? Some nice young lady is telling the world, this is what I think should the right way to do a Shalom Bias. You know, so wait a minute, but it's a good book. I mean, I wrote it, and I have the right ideas, and I have, and it's not in a guidance sort of way, it's that I am capable of doing this, and the proof of the pudding is I did it, and it came out right. So where did I get that kind of confidence? I got it from my parents. Now, that's not an excuse if your parents didn't give you that kind of self-concept that you have to live without it for the rest of your life. But if you can give it to your children, then they have a tremendous advantage. So many people suffer from a lack of self-confidence and a lack of self-image and self-esteem nowadays. It's unbelievable. People who are talented, people who are creative, people who are intelligent, and they really think they're not worth anything. And it comes out in relationships. Like they allow themselves to be abused because they think they deserve it, you know, and things like that. And it's very sad. It's very sad. So I think that's the biggest gift you can give your children is really to believe in them. And whatever it is, it might not be that they have academic intelligence. Maybe they have emotional intelligence. And also it depends on what you value. I know a girl who's a totally beautiful, intelligent girl, except that her father was a hotshot doctor. And her older two brothers were hotshot intellectuals, and she wasn't. And it was just very hard for her father to raise her as a nice, sweet, fine girl. Because, like, that wasn't his frame of reference. And that's a, you know, hopefully at the end of the day it all worked out. But I'm saying is that finding what's right with your own personal children and valuing them for that. I have one child who's very social, one child who's very quiet. There's something very common being quiet. Who says quiet is bad? Even if it's not me, it was me, you know what I'm saying? But you know, who says social is right? Who says social is good? There's no right and wrong. It's figuring out who your child is and treating them how they need to be treated. Now, sometimes it's a trick if you have a bunch of children and they need to be treated differently. I have one kid, and the way to bribe him was not to give him a cookie after he did the right thing. The way to bribe him was to give him a cookie before he did the right thing. And that reward would get him revved up to do the right thing. That's what works for him. Another kid, I say, you know, like, I really want you to do that, and I'll give you this and that. I go, Ma, don't bribe me, please. Like, I don't bribe. And it's pretty young. I don't bribe. Like, that's not my thing, you know. every kid is different. And as I said, the trick is to do what's right for each of them. And raising a bunch of kids is not raising a bunch of kids, but it's raising a bunch of individuals. Somebody once said, she was a student here, she wasn't so young, so she blamed this on the fact that her mother didn't know so well, and but now she's in her 50s or something like that, and she's like, my mother raised us as the girls. There were a bunch of us, and we were the girls. She said, I never felt like a person. I always felt like one of the girls, and she dressed us all the same. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with dressing the same, but somehow, whether her mother tried or not, whether her mother succeeded or not, obviously at the end of the day, I don't know that a person in her 50s, again, can blame it on her mother did it, and that doesn't sound like abuse to raise them as the girls, but somehow she felt that she missed out on being a person. So what I like to think, and I've never asked my kids, please don't ask them, is that each one thinks they're my favorite child. Because like I would like take one of them out for, you know, a special piece of pizza, and don't tell anyone, and then I would do it to the other one, you know what I'm saying? And each one would think that they were getting something special. Because to me, it's important that each kid should feel like an important person. Now, you could say, well, what about gaiva, you know, what about feeling, you know, raising them to feel haughty with themselves and things like that. And I don't think that that's a problem. I think a person has to know that whatever gifts I have are gifts given to me by Hashem. You know, I have a 7-year-old who is quite cute, Kenai Nahara. And I said to him, you know, he knows that he's smart. I mean, it's just a fact. You know, like he sits in class and he gets it, and you know, everybody knows that. You know, like someone's got to know it better and all that. And I said, you know why Hashem made you smart? He said, yes, so I could learn more Torah. So I don't think that makes him haughty. I think he gives him a sense of responsibility. You know, God gave me a brain; it's my job to put it in the right direction. Okay, so you have to realize that you are the foundation for your children, and the world is a very, very unstable place. It's a lot less stable than when we raised our kids, and it's moving fast forward. I mean, the innovations that are around today weren't even around 5 years ago, and the borders are different, and the communication is different. And I remember when the first cell phones came out, and I gawked. Now, like, you know, hey, how come a 7-year-old doesn't have his own cell phone yet? Like, you know, where is he when I need him? I mean, life is just moving it fast forward, but it's emotionally a very unstable place. And kids need to feel they have a home. And their home is their island of stability. And very often, parents are so busy trying to fix their kids that they make their lives just very uncomfortable. And well-meaning, they make their life uncomfortable, and therefore the kids are like, this isn't my home. It's like in my house, but it's not my home. And that's not fair. Kids need a home. If Chas V'Shalom parents are arguing all the time, then they don't have a home. They don't have a home because they feel the tension. If they feel that they're, you know, come home with a 75 on a test, and the parents are like, what? None of my kids ever got below 90. What's your problem? They don't have a home. And that's our job, is to create a sense of stability. And I think I created this Perush, but I'm not sure if I should put it on the tape then. But it says, we wish people, that's what we wish people, to build a faithful home in Israel, a bias neman. So, what does that mean, a bias neman? So I presume it means a house that's faithful to the traditions of our fathers. I presume that it's mean. But I said, there's another word. The word ne'aman also means like trustworthy. V'chol beisi ne'amanhu. I said, that's I think one of our major jobs nowadays is to create a house that's stable, that's trustworthy, that kids can come home and feel that they are loved and accepted. That they know that their parents care about them, love them, and accept them. Acceptance is a big thing. And sometimes it's hard for people. As I said, if someone is very academic and they, you know, and they can't accept that. If a kid takes a different stripe to Yiddishkeit, and wait a minute, this is not how we do things in our house. You can't do it like that. And I'm not judging any people, because sometimes it's very, very hard for parents to swallow when they have to deal with things, but at the same time, kids deserve a home where they are accepted. I read a story once. Some Hasidic Rebbe went to his some Hasid went to his Rebbe and to complain about his child who wasn't following the straight and narrow path, didn't want to wear Hasidic clothes, I don't know, whatever it was, and he said to the Rebbe, "That's on gift. I hope it'll be okay. That sounds good. It'll be good. I hope it'll be okay." And the Rebbe said, "It's a shine gift. It's already good. It's already good. Your son is good. He's not exactly following your expectations, but don't say it's not good. It's good." What we said before you walked in, what we're saying now is the importance of creating a stable home for your children, because they need to feel they have a home. And that's the world is a very unsteady place. It's almost like, you know, every home is sort of like a ship, and the ship is, you know, rocking back and forth. But if they feel that they're holding on tight and they have that ship, that's tremendously valuable for them. We also talked about the fact that that we have to know that the children we have are children that Hashem gave us. And therefore he has the confidence that we are capable of raising them. So we have to give ourselves that confidence. And then we have to give our kids a feeling of self-esteem that they are good and they are gems because they are children of Hashem and they are our children. So it doesn't mean, by the way, that a home to be a stable place has to be a place that everything goes. That doesn't mean that. And sometimes people make that mistake. And, oh, I don't want to agitate my kid. I don't want to tell them they can't do this, I can't do that. Because rules help stability. People feel comfortable with rules. They know as long as things are predictable. It's only if people fly off the handle and things are not predictable, and one day you get yelled and screamed at for walking in and leaving a puddle on the floor, and the next day you get yelled and screamed. And it's like everything's different. But if things are predictable, then kids feel very safe with rules. I had a principal who was a giant of a man. His name was Benjamin Steinberg. Mm-hmm. It's around his yard site now, actually. Mm-hmm. And he unfortunately passed away a while ago. But as an educator, he was unparalleled. And he had three words that he encouraged us as teachers always to follow. And I really think that these words can work for parents also. Friendly, firm, and fair. Friendly, firm, and fair. Friendly. One of our jobs as a parent is to be our child's friend. That's one of our jobs. It's a little complicated because when we are their friend, we can't obliterate the fact that there's a family structure. That's very important. And there's a mitzvah in the Torah called Kibud Av V'Em, which means parents and children are not all on one plane. And therefore, if a parent says something, the child does it, because that's called Kibud Av V'Em. And it's hard to do that. I'll get back to that later. But so I'm not saying we should be our kid's pal, as in at the same level. I'll just tell you a weird story. One of my students, her mom was a single mom, and they were both dating at the same time, and there was like a rivalry between them, you know, who got more dates and things like that. That's unhealthy psychology. No, no, no. A parent does not have to discuss their dating with their child. I mean, like, you know, excuse me. So I'm not saying that, but at the same time, a child should feel safe and have a relationship with their parents. And I try very hard. Actually, some of my parenting, I just owed it to Siyata Deshmaya that I came across it like by mistake almost. But my oldest daughter was about 7, 8 years old, and she was the oldest of 6 at the time. How much personal attention can I give her? I mean, but I tried to. I believe in treating each of my children as individuals and trying to work with them. And she liked to read exclusively. That was like her big love of life. Still is one of her big loves of life. And I said, well, you know, you need some exercise. Let's take a walk every evening. And we started 10-minute walk every evening. And it turned to be such an amazing thing. I had 10 minutes of private time with her. And she didn't need to clamor for my attention during the afternoon with all the little kids, because she knew she'd have her time and she would just wait for me to walk with her and talk about whatever it was. We kept it up for 10 years. We really did. And then all the other kids wanted to walk too. So I used to take turns. And there was a rule. If you come to run to join somebody else's walk, then you don't get your own walk and you have to ask for a walk before 7:30. We had a whole plan there. I used to like go walking with every kid. Now most of the kids aren't home and some of the kids are busy and et cetera, et cetera. But,
right.
But I'll tell you, I do walk with my husband, Baruch Hashem. But what I'm saying is that it ended up being private time in a busy household. So I think, you know, creating that and is creating a relationship where kids can just talk and feel safe. I have one of my kids who chose a slightly different path, but Baruch Hashem, she's a wonderful, amazing girl. And I was taking a walk with her, and as I was taking a walk, I was passing by a lecture about kids at risk. And she said to me, you know, I could have been one of those kids, except for the fact I knew I had a home. pathetic, like 13, 14 years old. And I'm like, wow. And when I used to walk with her, I used to say to her, the job of this walk is that she should feel that she could talk to me. And my job is not to be on her case and whatever. And she loves just to talk about this one's earrings and this one's jewelry. And I'm like, right, right, right. And I said to myself, if it's important to her, it's important to me. It's important to her, it's important to me. And that's my goal, is that to develop a relationship. There's actually a sister of Hirsch who says it. There's a place where it talks about, it happens to be not such a pleasant topic, where it talks about Nesu Mediach, and it says it could be this member of the family, it could be that member of the family, someone persuading the person against Yiddishkeit, and it doesn't say the father. But it says, Asher Kenafshecha, the one who's like your soul. So the person says that means the father, because that's the goal of the father, is to be like a soul partner to the child. The child can really feel that their parent understands them and is someone they can talk to. That doesn't mean they'll come to talk all the time, and sometimes it's a little frustrating. But they should feel that they're being heard. They should feel that that's where the friendly comes in. The goal is not to make their lives miserable. The goal is to make their lives as pleasant as possible. Sometimes you have to push them to make their lives pleasant, but it's a long-term thing. But that's okay. That's okay. Okay, so we said friendly, firm. Firm means stick to your guns. I was talking to a lady the other day, and she's like, you see, my kids don't listen to me. My kids don't listen to me. And she said to her three-year-old, come in. And the three-year-old didn't come in. She goes, my kids don't listen to me. But she wasn't saying to me, because you're giving me some parenting guidelines, so I didn't know if it was my job to give her any parenting guidelines. Of course your kids don't listen to you. You don't enforce it. If you say to a three-year-old, come here, and the three-year-old doesn't come, you didn't ignore that. You said to the three-year-old, did you hear your mommy say friendly? Friendly is fine. Did you hear your mommy say come? Oh, you didn't hear me? Oh, maybe you forgot to listen. Maybe your ears are busy listening to something else in your head. Mommy said come, so let's do that. Mommy said come, and you make them come. And that's what firm is. Firm is, you know, sticking to your guns and teaching your kids that your word is a word. And as I said, that doesn't negatively impact the feeling that their home is a good place. It positively impacts it because there's a sense of security in rules. In rules. I was once staying at the corner of Kikar Shabbat, and there was a lady there with a bunch of kids, English speaking, and they were crossing. The safest part to cross is when you're on Strauss and you want to get to Meir Sharm Street, for those of you who know Kikar Shabbat, but it was a red light. You don't cross on that street on a red light, even if it's the safest place and you see no cars. So a 10-year-old ran across the street. And the mother said, come back! Kid continued running across the street. Then the 8-year-old ran across the street. And the mother said, come back! Kid ignored the mother. Then the mother turned to the 5-year-old and said, good boy, you know that you don't cross the street against the light. And I said, the mother didn't even notice that she just talked to two kids who totally ignored her, and she didn't register it. That must be her style of parenting or non-parenting as a general rule. If you tell your kids to do something, they do it. We have a thing in our house. I sometimes say, if you're in the mood, you can do this and this, and sometimes I say, do it. If I say, if you're in the mood, then they can either do it or not. So I said to one of my kids, when you get bored tonight, you can wash the dishes. I came home, the dishes weren't washed. And I said, the dishes weren't washed because I wasn't bored. But I said that way on purpose because I didn't want it to be a confrontation. And this kid I knew would do it with a grump. It wasn't so important to me. I was just like giving them the opportunity to come up with to surprise me. It didn't work. But it's something that I say, you will wash the dishes, and they will wash the dishes. That's the only choice. Unless they say, Mommy, please talk about it. I have a test tomorrow. I don't have time. I'm not in the mood. Or it's cold. Whatever they want to say. But if they don't discuss it, then they wash the dishes. And I'm a very laid-back parent and very non, you know. Some parents, like, they say no just because they feel like saying no. You know what I mean? They're parents that way. I'll just say yes whenever they ask, unless there's a reason to say no. And I have to remind myself sometimes to say no, because it's not good for the kids to always think they can always get what they want. Like, my son came to me and says, Mommy, remember this Rosh Chodesh on Shabbos when you used to get pizza on Rosh Chodesh? Can I have pizza for lunch today? And I really wanted to say yes, because I think I can afford the eight chaplain and all that. I said, it's not good for him. He asks for pizza and he gets it. That's not good for him. So I said, no. I said, did you get pizza the week before when I was away? He said, yes. Okay. Forget it, you know. You lost it. And he accepted it. He accepted it. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's good to sometimes say no to your kids. But in general, I'm not. But in this one thing, in having kids not ignore what you're saying, you're creating a concept called the parent. And that is a source of the stability, that they know there is an anchor called the parent in their house and there's someone they can turn to. My mother used to say, blame it on me, blame it on me. You know? They feel that there's a parent in the house. So I always say to my kids, my students, I always said, you know, it's not a democracy. Like, the mother gets one vote, the father gets one vote, and each kid gets one vote. It's not a democracy. This is something totally different. This is something called a family with parents at the head of the family. And with one student who came from a very good home, she said, oh, she's like eighth grader. She said, oh, we just bought new wallpaper, and we had a vote. And I got one vote, and my mother got one vote. She basically totally ruined my message. But the answer is obviously that the mother felt that wallpaper was not the kind of thing that was so important that we had to, you know, like just vote on bedtime. The child has three votes and the mother has one vote. It doesn't work that way. Now, who's responsible for ruining this, by the way? The Dr. Spock. Dr. Spock totally denuded parents from their ability to have authority. Maybe not the only one. But now the concept of respect is so downtrodden, and like political people do not know, but political officers and things like that, they don't get respect. I mean, first of all, they don't deserve it, that might be right. But the idea is, I still know people from South Africa who the headmaster, when you walked in and the headmaster walked in, are you from South Africa? No, London. You stood up and you quivered a little bit because he was the headmaster. And in America, you have nothing like that. There's nothing. Okay.
Well, wait a minute, that's in Jewish schools, we did that also, right?
Right. In Jewish schools, a little more, but.
We're told to stand up.
Right. But there's a. I mean, I think comedy did have common.
No,
but I'm trying to say is that they really established in those places still a little bit of a concept of a hierarchy.
I went to a public school. And there wasn't any respect until they took prayer out of the school. Once prayer was taken out of the school, everything was just totally, everything just went down.
And parents, I was sitting where a bus stop went to a Matishkola, I had two girls, I guess they came from a Nakes, and they're talking to each other, you know, one of the schools over there. They're talking to each other, you know, my mother's really out of balance again, I have to tell her to go back to a psychologist. But where does it end? You know, once you get, there's no such thing called parents, and where do you end? I just went to the shiva over here for Reverend from Berman passed away. And she had been my teacher. Grandma Tiski's mother, and Mrs. El Tiski, and Mrs. What's the first name? Whatever. Reverend from Berman was a widow of Rabbi Berman. And they grew up right near me. And I went to the shiva, and they said what amazing things about her, of course, et cetera, et cetera. I said, you know, I remember your family from 40 years ago, and I remember that you were the family that the children stood up for the father. Mm. And I, you know, to us, growing up in America, that was weird, you know what I mean? That we never stood up for our father, and no one ever told us even that we should. We were just like American kids, and that family, the mother created that sense of respect for the father, because he was a Talmid Chacham, and their whole lives, and they said, like, when he prepared his shiur Sunday morning, they weren't allowed to say a noise, and there were five lively girls. They had the choice of either being out of the house when he started preparing his shiur, or stay in their rooms for the whole entire morning when he prepared his shiur. Like, it was a different era, and even in America, they said, it was already gone when I was growing up. But it doesn't mean that you cannot be firm and create a thing called parents. I once heard a shiur from Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, 25 years ago or something like that, and he said he encouraged parents to make their children stand up for them in America. The shiur was in Baltimore. And I heard him and I didn't do it. And I understand what he means. I don't know if I could do it now. Still, I don't know if I could do it. But because I grew up to American and we're all friends and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think he's right. I think he's right. The concept that parents should not be the same as kids, I think, is a concept that benefits everyone. It helps people have aim. You don't have people talking to such chutzpah, you know, to the person that they stand up for, hopefully, and things like that. Okay. So basically we're saying friendly, firm, and fair means at the same time the kids should feel totally accepted and able to share in a non-judgmental manner. And at the same time, there should be a concept called rules and a hierarchy, but things should be fair. But when things are not fair, then the kids get upset, because fair means that this misdemeanor gets this consequence, and this gets this reward, and then it's fair. It's fair. Fair does not mean you do the same thing to every child. It just doesn't work. You just cannot do the same thing to every child. It's not fair. You know, I go say to my kids, "Oh, you want me to buy you tefillin?" I say to my girls, "You want me to buy you tefillin? You know, we got to be fair. Everything's the same. You know what I mean? Oh, but you did this to this one. You did this to that one. You know? Or you know." You got the cake, you didn't cut it right, you got the bigger piece of small piece. And I said, "Oh, you're so happy for me as a big piece of cake that, you know, you want to also have a big piece of cake. It reminds you how yummy a big piece of cake," etc., etc. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is the kids have to know that it's not because you fly off the handle. Parenting has to be that you make a decision how you're going to parent, and then you do it. Not that you have your knee-jerk reactions and you're in a bad mood, she's in bad, everything, and you're not in a bad mood, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I once had a guest at the house, it was Baal Tshuva, and he was single, and one of my kids did something, and I said to my husband, "Is this something we patch for?" He was just like, "What? That's so strange." He says, "You mean you actually think about it before patching? Like the patch is not your automatic reaction because you're married to kid? That's what that whole new topic to him." No. You patch with the kid and use the patch, not that you need to patch, if you think the patching is appropriate.
What do they say today?
Today. I know. I think Rabbi Kellerman says no. Kellerman says no. Based on Rivaldi. And for sure, everybody agrees you never patch out of anger, for sure. You never patch out of anger. And if you're angry, then the best time not to patch, because you might, you know, patch wrong. I personally have no problem if there are predictable things that deserve a patch. I think for very little kids, a patch is fine for anything that's a danger, like putting something in an outlet or touching the stove.
Running
into the street. I think a patch is appropriate for that. I think in my personal house, I patch for biting. I think that's like one of those things they have to know, you know, to that. And then past that, I don't have a problem with it, and I don't think that it damaged him. It was yesterday, probably something so funny. He was 7 years old. I told him to stop taking some nosh, and he didn't stop. He forgot that that's what we do in our house. So I patched him to help remind him. He's crying. Like, he comes to me, and he snuggles up. He's like, he knows it. It doesn't matter. I wasn't angry at him. I said to him, "I didn't patch you with anger, and I patched you because you have to learn the rule in our house that we have to." He goes, "You know why I'm crying? Because I'm surprised." Because I patched so infrequently, he was just like surprised that I should do that. So I don't know if it was just the mood I was in or whatever, but I think that's fair that he should learn a lesson as long as it's not abuse. I once saw a man carry out his daughter from shul because she was talking in the middle of davening, in the middle of the rabbi's speech, and I saw she had like a pink mark on her hand. So he didn't like carry her out, he carried her out. Boy, was he mad at that 2-year-old. "Sir, you brought the 2-year-old into shul. The kid's quiet during the rabbi's speech. That's your problem, sir." You know, I don't think patching should ever be that hard that it, you know, it comes from your anger.
Age?
Yes. For sure. Any age that the kids are apt to, you know, strike back or to really get, you know, violent in other ways or something like that. I don't think it's worth it. It depends on the kid, whether it's 10, 12, you know, something like that. I think they say halachically that you shouldn't do it when they're over bar mitzvah, because then you're giving them the stumbling block in case they hit back, and that's also for them. But, so I'm not very big on patching, but the idea that there could be consequences is fine. I especially like rules, because then if they break the rules, they know they create their own consequence. And we had a time there was one kid, and that's fair, exactly. We had one kid who used to not come home when they were supposed to, like 6:30 for supper or whatever it was. So the deal was every 5 minutes you're out. Afterwards, you get docked in the house for 5 minutes. And then it wasn't strong enough, so we docked him for 10 minutes or whatever it was. You know, but it was a natural consequence to, they knew it. So by not coming home on time, they knew that they were choosing to be docked. You know what I'm saying? So as long as it's predictable, then I don't know. Like I said, I really patch very infrequently. And also, I'm not so big on necessarily punishing. Sometimes, once I had a six-year-old who knocked over a Scrabble board, and I said, you know, this is very bad. You don't know that because you don't know how to spell, so you don't know. Like, you know, there's some boards you knock them over, you put them back, you know, but a Scrabble board, you know, it's all over, and this is very frustrating. I said, I have two choices. I could punish you, and that way give you the message that this is really the wrong thing to do. Or I can just explain to you how words are put together and you can't remember. Well, then hopefully you remember it on your own. Just explain to me. It's okay. So sometimes I think that's good enough, just registering that the child did the wrong thing, especially when you're dealing with teenagers. So here we have people with 1-year-olds. You have teenagers. So teenagers is a chapter unto themselves. So they're somewhere between 2-year-olds and 18-year-olds all at the same time. But I try very hard to understand where my children are coming from. And I once said to one of my teenagers, and I said, it was very helpful. I said, I really feel bad for you. Because on one hand, you have an intelligent brain and you're observing the world and you're coming up with recommendations and how you think this house should be run. On the other hand, you know, you're the underling here and you know that nothing you say is going to make the difference. So it causes you a sense of frustration. And that's why you'll end up talking with slight lack of derech eretz. Really a chutzpah. But I think the fact that I understood where she was coming from, or the kid who wouldn't come home on time, I know why she wouldn't come home on time. She's busy jumping rope, and she's 8 years old, and the world is all about jumping rope. Oh, my mother said 6:30? 6:30, does that exist? And I look at my watch, you know, something like that. So, but I can't let her get away with it, but I can understand where it's coming from. She was a kid who loved life, and a kid who, you know, couldn't be bothered, but at the same time, mother said to be home at 6:30, so you have to be home at 6:30, so therefore for the consequence, but not that I was angry at the child for not, you know, showing up or something like that. Okay, they say in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that you shouldn't discipline a child for things that they're going to outgrow anyway. And a lot of times you can save yourself a lot of negative interactions, like if a 2-year-old jumps off a couch. When they're 10 years old, they're not going to be jumping off the couch. If you think it's dangerous, then you might have to stop them. But just for the sake of disciplining the kid, like, let them, like, jump off the couch when they're 2, and then they'll grow up and have, you know. They say that the wildest kids end up being the best kids, since they have that kind of drive and initiative. And just at a certain age comes as wildness, and then when they get older, I don't believe in, you know, thwarting them, and I'll let them run around, let them do something that, but waste, you know, save your disciplining for things that are really things that could have, you know, long-term consequences. Not willing to share, you know, because that's a selfishness or jealousy or whatever it is. And those are the kind of things you have to shape and you have to. I'm very big to talking to my kids and discussing it with them and helping them understand. So. My poor 7-year-old, she's trying to take it. Anyway, seriously, I once discussed with Rav Pliskin, there's no issur lashon hara to talk about kids as things that's age appropriate. Like if I tell you my 7-year-old got upset because someone messed up his model that he was building, you won't remember that when he's ready for a shidduch and say this kid has an anger problem. So if any 7-year-old would do that. So that you're allowed to talk, that's not called lashon hara. Anyway, so anyone who gets angry sometimes, it's that same energy that is the love of life and he's a gishmaki kid and all that, in the negative way, you know, he's quick to react. Someone hasn't forgot Perkiavos and showed him that there are different ways that some people get angry quickly and some people, you know, don't get angry quickly but they store it for a long time and he sees to get out which one here and et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's you're giving them tools, you know what I'm saying? We don't punish him when he gets angry as much as help him get over it because that's what's really going to be more beneficial for life. So one day he came in and they messed up the toys, it's all set, and then I don't know, I put him in Zoom and goes, and then and he came back and said, no. When I walk out of the room, when I come back, I'm not so angry. I said, you know, like, this is making himself aware. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone has midos that they need to grow in. Like, nobody is born perfect. And then when they are, you worry about them. You know what I'm saying? You worry either what they're repressing or what they're not, you know, connecting to. Or they're not learning how to deal with things that don't go their way. So sometimes, you know, we're doing them more of a favor by letting them run through difficult situations than just, you know, making everything go so smoothly for them. So, I had one kid who was a very good kid, and I once went out to the porch, and I said, come in already. And really, because I was talking to two kids, and the other one I had said to come in already, so I said it a little annoyed to the both of them. And he said, you didn't just be annoyed. If you would have just said, please come in, I would have come in. So I had just been teaching the beginning of Malachim. It says that David HaMelech never agitated Adoniyahu to say you did something wrong, and the assumption, the inference is that that's why Adoniyahu, you know, went to the wrong path and ended up usurping the power and becoming the king. And I went, Lo Atzavo Aviv Miyamav. He never agitated to say Lama Kacha Asi. So why did you do such a thing? That's what the pasuk says. The very beginning of Malachim Aleph. So I went to his right Torah from a very wise man. He said, he said, what do you mean? You think David HaMelech didn't give Musa to Adonia? Adonia was a bad kid and David HaMelech never gave him Musa? How's the problem? David HaMelech was David HaMelech. He said, probably Adonia was a good kid. Because he was such a good kid, he never got Musa. But the net result was he never had to learn how to deal with self-improvement. So he said, I said to my son, I'm really doing you a favor. I'm giving you an opportunity to hear some Muslim if you don't deserve it. He was like, He's 8 years old. Seriously. Sometimes we try to protect our kids, and we're not doing them a favor. Teaching them, giving them the tools to deal with frustrating things is sometimes a lot more beneficial than protecting them from frustrating things. So, and sometimes I think the best thing to do with negative behavior is just ignore it. Because the more you focus on negative behavior, the more they get the image of being a bad kid. Whereas the more you focus on positive behavior and catch them doing something right, especially in teenagers. Teenagers, when they fly off the handle and say, seems we have a teenager in the house. I'll just close my ears to this one. And then, 5 minutes later, they'll turn into a mensch and help set the table and say, thank you for helping set the table. They'll forget that they were out of control for a half hour and helpful for 5 minutes. Whereas if you, like, get on their case for how they're acting out of control, then they'll get the image, oh, my mother thinks I'm a bad kid, I can't do anything right, even if they did set the table, or they won't even offer to set the table, or something like that. It takes a lot of patience to be a parent. A lot of patience. And the word in Hebrew for patience is sablanus. And sablanus is the same word as lisbol. Lisbol is like to suffer. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you have to suffer a lot in silence, and it's an investment. It's an investment. So,
when do you not react in terms of this whole story that you could cross the road? When do you not react in quiet when?
Okay, so. Well, I really think that children should learn certain things and they should be non-negotiable. One of them is to listen to your parents. So that I think. If you're talking about that they did something dangerous, I mean, they got across, thank God. They all got across. But I think that you would, you know, call the kid over later and say, look, you know, I love you and I care about you and you will not cross that street at a red. It's just, you know, not appropriate, you know. Sometimes kids defy and all that, but a lot of times they thought it was free and they thought they could run and they just didn't get an education that, you know, you don't do that. You know what I'm saying? So, but I read this once. It wasn't from a Jewish source, but it sounds like a Jewish source to me. They said 5 compliments for every criticism. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so easy to criticize, because nobody's perfect. I was once walking with a lady, and she's like, the kids are not walking on the sidewalk, they're walking on the street. But it was a very quiet area, and it was very close to the sidewalk, and she said, get back to the street, get back to the sidewalk, get to the walk aside, get back to the sidewalk. I walked this up for 5 minutes, I said, gosh, it's a good thing I'm not her kid, because I'd be choked by then, you know what I mean? 5 criticisms. Of course, they also didn't listen, you know, because if they'd be on the sidewalk, she wouldn't have to keep saying it. I didn't hear anything positive that whole time. You know what I'm saying? So if you give your kids a basis of positivity and then you find things that are worth criticizing and in small doses. And there's a whole halacha on how to give tochacha. And the halacha of tochacha is a very volatile one, so much so that some people say, we're not equipped to give tochacha today. But it has to end up giving tochacha to your kids all the time. Right? So one of the things about tochacha, I'll just end with this. One of the things about tochacha is that it should be in private. A lot of times kids yell, parents yell at their kids in front of other kids, and they don't yell, unless the child did something so bad in front of other children that you have to make sure the other children know that this got taken to task for. It should be with a pleasant tone of voice. Most times when parents yell at their kids, they're not doing it in a pleasant tone of voice. So the kids should get the feeling. It should be true, and they should get the feeling that the reason why this child is being taken to task is because the parents loves and cares about the child so much that they want them to grow. Not because the parent is embarrassed that the child misbehaved that way, not because the parent, you know what I'm saying, is down on this child, but the child should really get the feeling, I care about you, and this is important for you to become a better person. It says, Lo sisa alav chet, they say a drish on Lo sisa alav chet, hachech tachich hasametech, Lo sisa alav chet, do not build up the sin, build up the person. You are such an intelligent child, I can't believe you said that to your teacher. Maybe your brain flew away, it's okay, you know, please don't say it again. I know you're worth more than that. So like, build up the child and not build up the, you know, the sin. And give them a way out. If you say, you know, like, you can't talk like that to your teacher, but then you say, I know it's sometimes frustrating that you want to talk that way to your teacher. So it's ready to note and then crumble to note. And like, if you give them something else they can do, then that helps them. Those are some general, very quick guidelines on Tochacha. As I said, I'm low on criticism and pretty high on building kids up. And I don't know, Baruch Hashem, my kids are doing pretty well, so maybe I'll do something right. And of course, you have to begin and end with all this, with Siyata Dishmaya and Daven Har. Because you could do everything right, and then it something, you know, some teacher says the wrong comment and it sends your kid a tailspin. You could do everything wrong and the kid can somehow. I know one guy whose mother lost custody of him because she was a drug addict and she was the more stable parent. Mm-hmm. That's like pretty bad parenting, right? And he's a stable adult.
Wow.
So no matter what you do wrong, kids are resilient. They can, you know, they can do it right. Sometimes parents, they don't have the confidence. Somebody says to me, I always know when my mother goes to one of those parenting classes because she's just like tiptoeing around and thinking before she does everything. And that's also a lack of comfort for the children because they don't think their parents have the confidence. And someone says to me, my mother did everything wrong. She patched us. She's a Holocaust survivor. She was tested. But we knew she was confident what she was doing and she loved us. Right. And we all turned out okay. You know what I'm saying? So I think that these things are so fickle that you need tremendous siyata d'shmaya and to daven for your kids and for yourself and for your family. And halavai, Hashem should bless your efforts. To be continued.